is a KUNM interview, February 26th, with Jerry Wilkerson, Executive Director, NIYC, Assistant Executive Director, Sam English, and is your name Marvin Jones? Myron Jones, NCAI. And Wayne LeBeau might be here. And Coleman would do the interviewing.
Good evening. My name is Mike Colvin. You're listening to Acropolis, a monthly program of interviewing and debate and generally a forum style of programming. Tonight's subject is dealing with end-in affairs, and we have with us in the studio this evening Mr. Gerald Wilkinson, who is Executive Director of the National Indian Youth Council, Mr. Sam English, who is Associate Director of the National Indian Youth Council, Mr. Myron Jones, former Project Director for Community Development for the National Congress of American Indians, and Mr. Dwayne LeBeau, who is a law student at UNM. And I will be questioning them on various aspects of Indian affairs. To start off, what I would like to ask first is, what are the basic problems of Indians in a primarily white culture? If any of you would like to respond. We can edit out anything that goes over the tape, so don't feel, inhibited.
Well, I think probably the most revealing aspect of the problem is found in the statistics relating to Indian poverty. For example, in the field of education, 60 to 70% of Indian students drop out of high school. Only 1% of the Indian population goes to college, and of this 1%, about 60% drop out. In the field of housing, it runs as high as 80% of Indians living in substandard dwellings. The average family income for example, in Philadelphia, Mississippi, is about $550 a year. The Navajo reservation is $1,500 a year. The reasons for these statistics are more complex, and I think just recently have we been able to make some improvement in them. But I think that some of the basic kind of reasons that these statistics exist, we haven't made much progress as far as that goes.
Would you say that then most of the Indian community lives in a kind of poverty-stricken situation?
Well, it depends on what you mean by poverty. I think that we're poor in physical means, but I wouldn't think that Indians belong to the culture of poverty at all. I think we belong to very rich culture. We have very the lifestyle of Indians is very rewarding and very fulfilling. I think, and so when you talk about Indian poverty, I think you're talking about lack of material things.
Is there a conflict between the kinds of opportunities that are open to Indians who live on reservations and those people who move off of the reservation and go and acculturate themselves into a white urban situation?
Yeah, I think there is in one sense, and that is that the dominant white world has the greatest respect for that which seems to be familiar, like it. And so someone who had spent many years in a city or someone who was born in a city will feel more like the white person, and in that case, be easier to hire. I think it's really is. It's very much like the situation where for years and years, only light, very light-skinned Negroes were hired for anything. And now something has changed in some way. Afros are acceptable. I think someone could have spent 30 years on a reservation if they were well-educated and seemed to whites to have a white style about them. It would make it simpler. You also find the situation that people will say that the Indians immediately around them are not acceptable to them, but all other Indians are wonderful. In a situation where people out here think Eastern Indians are fine, people in the East think that Pueblos are probably great. The love or acceptance is inversely proportional to the distance. Directly proportional to the distance.
What accounts for that? I mean, why is that so?
Ethnocentricity.
I think one of the
group egocentricity.
Yeah, I think one of the things that that this country has a fear of are people that are of difference. You see that in Oklahoma, in a country store, when a white farmer goes in and finds two Indians speaking Creek or Cherokee, he's absolutely terrified over this thing. And you run into, as long as it's kind of, there's a proximity, you know, he's scared, but if it's kind of out there, it becomes kind of a fantasy, and perhaps the Eastern people, Pueblos, are kind of, don't really exist, perhaps, there's some kind of romantic idea of Pueblos. Perhaps in the East, and out here, it's another kind of situation. For example, in Ponca City, Oklahoma, local Indians are very often refused service in bars. However, Indians from outside the area seldom have much trouble in getting served.
There's then a kind of comparison that could be made between blacks and Indians in that respect, I suppose, too, that the northern Negro was perhaps more acceptable to the southern white than the people that lived in his own area that were black. The United States certainly historically hasn't had a very good, very clean record regarding its affairs with Indians and dealing with them. Principal among those, I suppose, would be the whole question of land. Do Indians have enough land on which to live and to eke out some sort of living?
Certainly not. Many of the tribes are constantly in the process of litigation to be able to get back some of the land that's been lost. And of course, one of the main problems of the federal government over the years has been attempting to get the Indian people to do the things that some other people should be doing. As for the situation, for example, where many of the Indian people are not the agrarian type. Many of them are. Of course, some are, but the majority of them aren't. And for whatever land that the Indian people have, most of it is barren, like Arizona, New Mexico here. White people can't hardly maintain a living on 320 or 160 acres of land, certainly. You know, why should any be expected?
Yes, that's certainly true.
Another one of the problems, too, I might mention, if you often that land which is Indian-owned is not Indian-controlled. In other words, on many reservations, that the white community has almost total control over most of it, as far as leasing and as far as other kinds of things.
Through the BIA?
Through the BIA and through various other kinds of means.
Yeah, I have some statistics on that. The white income per acre on Indian land is 14 times the Indian income. And that has usually to do with the big jump is between irrigated land and unirrigated land. So it isn't just a matter of the land. There's a close connection, of course, between land and capital. And the whites who come in with enormous farms and enough capital to irrigate it, to develop it, and so forth. And that that's on Indian land. But the Indians on their own land, on that same land adjoining it, will not be able to hear it.
Even if the Indian people could, for example, one of the basic needs of anyone who is doing any type of work in the area of farming, agriculture, so on and so forth, needs the necessary capital. One of the basic problems with Indian people is that you can't get the necessary capital. Because first of all, your land is held up in trust. The bankers, the various financial people are very reluctant to want to do anything with regard to land that's held in trust. That's one basic problem that many of the people have, even if they do want to go into expand, for example, whatever operation they might have. For example, cattle, where the economic unit might be 200 head, where they might have 50. The problem is getting the money to be able to finance and expand that operation. It's one of the very basic problems.
Have certain tribes been more successful than others in terms of establishing a decent standard of living, and why would this be so?
I think you're talking about something that's very part of the culture, the fact that the value systems of Indian people aren't the same as the non-Indian society. Standards, for example, like you mentioned here, just aren't the same.
What would those standards be for most?
Well, it depends. It depends on which area you're in, who you're with. Just as a prime example, one of the values of the non-Indian culture is the fact that perhaps you have a paying $20,000 mortgage on your home, a new car, so on and so forth, whereas the Indian people don't. This isn't necessarily a standard by which, or a standard that they attempt to achieve. It just isn't, because the value system isn't as such.
What things are important to Indians culturally? Is it mostly a cultural thing?
Personal integrity, for example, which isn't necessarily the same as a non-Indian society. That's one example. The status of the father, his place in his own society, which is his family, isn't the same necessarily as a non-Indian society. These are just some of the things.
The Indians have had great difficulty working with the BIA at times, and I was wondering if some of these attitudes are expressed in the way that the BIA works with Indian groups. Would the BIA be representative of a kind of white attitude toward Indians?
Yeah, I think representative of it, and also victims of it without knowing it in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in a funny way, it has to do with tribal leadership. One of the things that always gets to me about meeting tribal groups or inter-tribal groups is that within a period of an hour there will be outside people coming in discussing, asking the tribal council to make a decision on water rights, on land rights, on investment, on very, very complex issues, more complex than any group of 50 men in the world would be willing to deal with in a space of 2 or 3 hours. And the result of that is that the tribal leadership is responsible, theoretically responsible, for anything and everything that affects the tribe. Nevertheless, they're put into a position where they have to... They're manipulated, I think, by the agenda of meetings like this and by the agenda of outside needs, and they're put in a position of needing some expert advice immediately, and the BIA steps into that role and supposedly then handles the investment question, how much timber to cut and when. I don't think it's necessary at all that they do play that role, but the everything works toward that because of the way problems are pushed in a sudden way.
Then
water rights alone is more complex than any 10 people.